Hi, this is David. If you're serious about your health and performance, what you put in your body matters. That's why for many years I cut out snack foods, since so many are filled with unhealthy, if not downright harmful, ingredients. However, that's changed in recent weeks, thanks to Thrive Market. I've been trying their healthier, organic snacks like Simple Mills crackers, Magic Spoon protein treats, Go Macro bars, and my new favorite, Love Corn sea salt crunchies. Thrive Market doesn't just sell snacks. They've got you covered for all your healthy grocery shopping needs, and at great prices. You also can get top-tier vitamins and supplements for longevity, recovery, and a good energy boost. They even carry antioxidant-rich green tea and anti-inflammatory superfoods. Want to upgrade your health? Go to thrivemarket.com/inspirational for 30% off your first order, plus a free $60 gift. That's THRIVE market.com/inspirational. thrivemarket.com/inspirational. Thank you.
Welcome to Our Sunday Talks, an exclusive series for the patrons of the Inspirational Living Podcast. Today's reading was edited and adapted from Vedanta Philosophy, Five Lectures on Reincarnation by Swami Abhidananda, published in 1896. The amazing achievements of modern science have been opening every day new gates of wisdom and slowly bringing human minds nearer and nearer to the ultimate reality of the universe. The fire of knowledge kindled by science has already burnt down many dogmas and beliefs that were held sacred by the superstition of the past and which stood in the way of truth-seeking minds. In the first place, science has disproved the theory of the creation of the universe out of nothing by the action of some supernatural power. It has shown that the universe did not appear in its present form or come into existence all of a sudden only a few thousand years ago, but that it has taken ages to pass through different stages before it could reach its present condition. Each of these stages was directly related to a previous stage by the law of causation, which always operates in accordance with definite rules. The phenomena of the universe, according to science, are subject to evolution, that is, a gradual change and progressive development from a relatively uniform condition to a relative complexity. From the greatest solar system down to the smallest blade of grass, everything in the universe has taken its present shape and form through this cosmic process of evolution. The theory of evolution says that human beings did not come into existence all of a sudden, but that we are related to lower animals and to plants, either directly or indirectly. The germ of life passed through various stages of physical form before it could appear as a human. In explaining the theory of evolution, science says that there are two principal factors involved in the process. The first is the tendency to vary, which exists in all living forms, whether vegetable or animal. The second is the tendency of environment to influence that variation, either favorably or unfavorably. Without the first, evolution of any kind would be absolutely impossible. But the cause of that innate tendency to vary is still unknown to science. Upon the second factor depends the law of natural selection. The variation must be adapted to favorable conditions of life, Consequently, either the germ of life will select suitable environments or vary itself in order to suit the surrounding conditions if they are unfavorable. But the agent of this selective process is the struggle for existence. Thus, evolution depends on these three laws: tendency to vary or variation, natural selection, and the struggle for existence. Science tries to explain through these three laws the physical, mental, intellectual, moral, and spiritual evolution of humankind. But the theory of evolution will remain unintelligible until science can trace the cause of that innate tendency to vary, which exists in every stage of all living forms. If we study closely, we find that our individual, quote, self consists of two natures, one animal and the other moral or spiritual. Our animal nature includes all the animal propensities: desire for sense enjoyments, love of self, fear of death, and the struggle for existence. Our spiritual nature expresses itself in various ways, but on a higher plane: love of truth, mastery over passion, control of the senses, disinterested self-sacrifice, mercy and kindness to all creatures, desire to help the distressed, forgiveness, faith in a supreme being, and devotion. All these are the expressions of that higher moral and spiritual nature. Such qualities cannot be explained as developed from animal nature by means of the struggle for material existence, for they are not to be found in lower animals, although the struggle for existence is there. The moral and spiritual nature of human beings thus cannot be traced as the outgrowth or gradual development of the animal nature. There is a dispute among evolutionists as to the method of explaining the cause of these higher faculties. Some say that they have evolved out of the lower ones and have developed by variation and natural selection, while others hold that some other higher influence, law, or agency is required to account for them. The Indian philosophy of Vedanta accepts evolution and admits the laws of variation and natural selection, but goes a step beyond modern science by explaining the cause of the tendency to vary. It says, "There is nothing in the end which was not also in the beginning." And this law governs the process of evolution as well as the law of causation. If we admit this grand truth of nature, then it will not be difficult to explain by the theory of evolution the gradual manifestation of our higher spiritual nature. Each germ of life, according to Vedanta, possesses infinite potentialities and infinite possibilities. The powers that remain latent have the natural tendency to manifest perfectly and to become actual. In their attempt, they vary according to the surrounding environments, selecting suitable conditions or remaining latent as long as circumstances do not favor them. Therefore, variation, according to Vedanta, is caused by this attempt of the potential powers to become actual. When life and mind began to evolve, the possibilities of action and reaction, hitherto latent in the germ of life, became real, and all things became, in a sense, new. Nobody can imagine the amount of latent power which a minute germ of life possesses until it expresses in form on the physical plane. By seeing the seed of a banyan tree, one who has never seen the tree cannot imagine what powers lie dormant in it. When a baby is born, we cannot tell whether the child will be a great inventor, or a wonderful artist, or a philosopher, or an idiot, or a villain of the worst type. Each individual mind is the storehouse of many powers, various impressions, and ideas, some of which manifest, while others remain latent. Our present condition of mind and body is nothing but the manifest form of certain dormant powers that exist in ourselves. If new powers are roused up and begin to manifest, the whole nature will be changed into a new form. The manifestation of latent powers is at the bottom of the evolution of one species into another. It has been said that the evolution of one species into another species is caused by the infilling of nature. The nature is filled not from without, but from within. Nothing is superadded to the individual soul from outside. The seeds are already there, but their development depends upon their coming in contact with the necessary conditions requisite for proper manifestation. We sometimes see a wicked person suddenly become saint-like. There are instances of murderers and robbers becoming saints. A religious person will explain the cause of their sudden change by saying that the grace of the Almighty has fallen upon them and transformed their whole nature. But Vedanta says that the moral and spiritual powers that remain latent in them have been roused up, and the result is the sudden transformation. None can tell when or how the slumbering powers will wake up and begin to manifest. The germ of life, or the individual soul as it is ordinarily called, possesses infinite possibilities. Each germ of life is studying, as it were, the book of its own nature by unfolding one page after another. When it has gone through all the pages, or in other words, all the stages of evolution, perfect knowledge is acquired, and its course is finished. We have read our lower nature by turning each page, or in other words, by passing through each stage of animal life, from the minutest bioplasm up to the present stage of existence. Now we are studying the pages which deal with moral and spiritual laws. If anyone wants to read any page over again, they will do it. Just as in reading a book, if anybody feels particularly interested in any page or chapter, they will read it over and over again, and will not open a new page or a new chapter until they are perfectly satisfied with it. Similarly, in reading the Book of Life, if the individual soul likes any particular stage, they will stay there until they are perfectly satisfied with it. After that, they will go forward and study other pages. One may read very slowly, and another very fast. But whether we read slowly or rapidly, each one of us is bound to read the whole book of nature and attain to perfection sooner or later. According to Vedanta, the end and aim of evolution is the attainment of perfection. Physical evolution of animal life reached its perfection in human form, and the end of intellectual, moral, and spiritual evolution will be attained when intellectual, moral, and spiritual perfection are acquired. Intellectual perfection means perfection of intellect. An intellect is perfect when we understand the true nature of things and never mistake the unreal for the real, matter for spirit, non-eternal for eternal, or vice versa. Moral perfection consists in the destruction of selfishness, and spiritual perfection is the manifestation of the true nature of spirit, which is immortal, free, divine, and one with the universal spirit or God. Evolution attains to the highest fulfillment of its purpose when the spirit manifests perfectly. There are many stages in the higher nature, as well as in the lower. Each of these stages binds the individual soul so long as it stays there. As it rises on a higher plane, the lower stages disappear and cease to bind. But the moment that any individual, after passing through all the stages of the spiritual nature, reaches the ultimate point of perfection, they realize their true nature, which is immortal and divine. Then their true individuality manifests. The doctrine of reincarnation differs from the accepted theory of evolution in admitting a gradual but continuous evolution of the spiritual body through many physical forms. The physical body may appear or disappear, but the spiritual body continues to exist even after the dissolution of the physical body and remanifests itself in some other form. The theory of reincarnation, when properly understood, will appear as a supplement to the theory of evolution. Without this most important supplement, the evolution theory will never be complete and perfect. Evolution explains the process of life, while reincarnation explains the purpose of life. Therefore, both must go hand in hand to make the explanation satisfactory in every respect. James Freeman Clark says, "What is called evolution teaches that we have reached our present state by a very long and gradual ascent from the lowest animal organizations. The Darwinian theory takes no notice of the evolution of the soul, but only of the body. But it appears to me that a combination of the two views would remove many difficulties which still attach to the theory of natural selection and the survival of the fittest. If we are to believe in evolution, let us have the assistance of the soul itself in this development of new species. Thus science and philosophy will cooperate, nor will poetry hesitate to lend her aid. The theory of reincarnation is a logical necessity for the completion of the theory of evolution. If we admit a continuous evolution of a unit of the germ of life through many physical manifestations, then we unconsciously accept the teachings of the doctrine of reincarnation. When passing through different forms and manifestations, the unit of life does not lose its identity or individuality. As the Bhagavad Gita says, in our ordinary life, the individual soul passes from a baby body to a young one, and from a young one to an old one, and carries with it all the impressions, ideas, and experiences that it has gathered in its former stage of existence, and reproduces them in the proper time. So, when we die, the individual soul passes from an old body into a new one, and takes with it the spiritual body, wherein are stored up all that it experienced and gathered during its past incarnations. Knowing this, wise men and women are never afraid of death. They know that death is nothing but a mere change from one body into another. Therefore, if anyone does not succeed in conquering the lower nature by the higher, they will try again in their next incarnation, after starting from the point which they reached in their past life. They will not begin again from the very beginning, but from the last stage at which they arrived. Thus we see that reincarnation is the logical sequence of evolution. It completes and makes perfect that theory, and explains the cause of the moral and spiritual nature of humanity.
Location, the lab. Quentin only has 24 hours to sell his car. Is that even possible? He goes to Carvana.com.
What is this, a movie trailer?
He ignores the doubters, enters his license plate. Wow, that's a great offer. The car is sold, but will Carvana pick it up in time for...
They'll literally pick it up tomorrow morning. Done with the dramatics?
Car selling in record time.
Save your time. Go to Carvana.com and sell your car today. Pickup fees may apply.